As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Straight Outta Cobham, the Chelsea FC podcast from The Athletic. This week we're discussing clean sheets and away wins, a pair of upcoming home games. We'll answer your questions and round up the rest of the news in and around the club, all in the company of The Athletic's Chelsea experts. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Hello listener, hope you're doing well, managing your minutes in the dumpster fire that is 2020. I'm Matt Davies-Adams. Every week, me and the Athletic's Chelsea chaps convene to discuss all the latest Blues news. Having blown us away with his cheeriness last week, we're all on tenterhooks to see how Simon Johnson kicks off today's show. Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Very good. Liam Toomey also joins us.
Hello. I know the listeners can't see us, but we're in a 4-3-3 formation today.
It's proven very successful. Dominic Fifield's also on board. Hi, Dom.
Am I the holding midfielder?
Always. Let's get started. Our first port of call is Saturday's win at Burnley. Free and easy for Chelsea in the Northwest on Saturday. The Blues recording a fourth clean sheet and leaving with 3 points, courtesy of goals from Hakim Ziyech, Kurt Zouma and Timo Werner. So 11 games played this season, only one defeat. Dom, has this past week really shifted perceptions of Chelsea's start to the season, do you think?
Superficially, perhaps, but I think when we were talking about it a few weeks back, we suggested that they needed to demonstrate some solidity in the two sort of vaguely daunting fixtures coming up, which were Sevilla and Manchester United, which they then did with clean sheets in both. And then when we spoke last week, it was like, well, now they need to impose some attacking flair and to demonstrate that they can take teams apart and dismantle opponents. And they've done exactly that as well with Krasnodar and Burnley. And now when you look at the run of games from the start of the season, it's the solitary defeat against Liverpool in that first home game of term, and then a defeat on penalties in the League Cup, which, you know, again, one all at Tottenham isn't actually a bad result from 90 minutes play. So yes, it looks better on paper, but it's about maintaining momentum now. That this run of games that we discussed until Chelsea play Spurs at the end of November, they need to keep picking up these victories. They need to beat the Rennes home and away. They need to beat Sheffield United at home and win at Newcastle. And then they got real momentum. And suddenly you look at a strange-looking Premier League table with opportunities all over the place and Chelsea very much in contention.
Here's a tweet from Manu who asks, will Lampard still use the 4-3-3 going ahead, or will we actually see 4-2-3-1 more in play this season? Liam, you've written something on formations for The Athletic.
Yeah, my match piece was specifically on the 4-3-3 because it worked exceptionally well. Lampard kind of teased after the Krasnodar game that he wanted to take a look at it in bigger minutes. So it wasn't a surprise to see him start with it at Turf Moor. And the balance to Chelsea's play, I think, was better than arguably at any time in Lampard's tenure, I think. Ben Chilwell and Reece James were two of the most attacking players on the pitch, but it didn't compromise them defensively because of the security that N'Golo Kante gave to the defence in that deepest midfield position, the presence of Thiago Silva next to Kurt Zouma in that back line, the fact that Kante doesn't progress the ball brilliantly, perhaps as well as Jorginho or Kovacic, didn't matter so much with Mason Mount, who I thought was magnificent, and Kai Havertz either side of him being a bit more expansive. And then you had Timo Werner and Hakim Ziyech, pretty much the functional points of Chelsea's attack, with Tammy Abraham almost a false nine. He dropped so deep to link play and I think did a really selfless job for the team. And overall, it was just a really complete Chelsea performance. And those were the words that Lampard used afterwards. And I think given the emphatic nature of the result and all aspects of their play, it really wouldn't surprise me now if Lampard decides to make this the team's default setting going forward.
And yet another clean sheet, although this one may be as much down to Burnley's ineptitude in front of goal as it was Chelsea's defensive solidity. But no denying that the brilliant start that Edouard Mendy's had, one goal conceded in his six Chelsea appearances versus Kepa's 14 in his last six Chelsea games. Simon, is he better than we expected, Mendy?
I think you have to say yes, just in terms of no one expected him to make this kind of impact, this kind of level of positive impact so soon. But it's not just down to him. I think Thiago Silva's been absolutely massive in front of him as well, just to give that reassuring presence. But the contrast in the whenever a shot or a cross comes in Chelsea's area, there's just a different feel about it. He's such so much more of a commanding presence, and Chelsea is certainly reaping the benefits of this. You know, look, as the stat has come out, you know, this is the first keeper since Petr Cech to keep clean sheets in his first three league starts. I mean, it's very, very impressive stuff. Early days, you sort of feel like you don't want to talk him up too much and don't want to put the mockers on him. But definitely shot stopping is good. His coming for crosses is good. His decision making is good. The only thing that has caused a bit of alarm was that weird pass that he attempted at Old Trafford that could have led to a rather embarrassing own goal. But apart from that, I don't think he's put a foot wrong.
You mentioned Mason Mount, Liam, a slightly adjusted position for him. I spoke to him post-match with Chelsea TV and he said that is his position. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And you can see that from the way he approached it. I think it's the position that allows him to show the full range of what he can do for a team. We all know that he's excellent at leading the press. He's good. He's a pretty good decision maker in possession, even if maybe his decisions in the final third can be improved a little bit. And he does the defensive side really well. He's got a very complete skill set, Mount, for a player so young. And I think that's really suited to a three-man midfield where, as good as Kante is, he does need the two midfielders either side of him to help him and provide some of that energy and protection. He was arguably the best player on the pitch for Chelsea against Burnley.
Here's a question from Vivek, which I'll put to you, Dom. When I first read this, I raised an eyebrow, but actually maybe it's legit. They ask, is Zouma, Thiago Silva the best centre-back partnership in the Premier League currently? Manny adding, how important has Thiago Silva been next to Zouma? Big Kurt in sensational form at the moment. What do you think?
A few weeks ago, we would have scoffed at the suggestion. But actually, when you look at it and look at how Chelsea's defensive unit has been transformed and indeed, you know, how they've been performing has been transformed over recent weeks, it does appear to have the right combinations. I think Zouma's game is definitely improved, having somebody as experienced as Thiago Silva at his side. I mean, it must inspire you with confidence. You've got a player there that was playing in a blooming Champions League final a couple of months back alongside you. You're not asking Kurt Zouma to be the senior player in that back line, in the centre of that defence. So it must be a benefit. Any little aspects of the game, any little hints or tips, or even just watching Thiago Silva play, will benefit Kurt Zouma's continued development in that role. And it does feel the right combination. There's an abrasiveness to it. There's an organisation to it now that Thiago is dictating things. I mean, Zouma's done it at both ends of the pitch recently. That was a booming header to put Chelsea 2 up at Turf Moor, and in a season where it's been wildly unpredictable how teams have defended, Chelsea in the last few weeks have struck upon a consistency. And actually, where are the other combinations that would challenge them as the best in the country? That they're not many out there. I did a piece with Sol Campbell a few weeks back, and he was bemoaning the fact that Virgil van Dijk's pretty much the only amazing defender, central defender in the Premier League at present, and that was before Thiago Silva really imposed himself on the division. But, you know, Virgil van Dijk's out for the season. Aymeric Laporte isn't playing very often for Manchester City for various different reasons. And you actually look at it, and Thiago Silva and Kurt Zouma suddenly seems like a proper partnership that could, a solid base upon which Chelsea could mount a surprising challenge.
The only sour note from Saturday, the sensation, as Frank Lampard called it, that Christian Pulisic felt in his hamstring, meaning he was withdrawn from the starting lineup just before kickoff. Here's Kyle asking, how worrying are these hamstring injuries to Pulisic? Or is it a case of the condensed nature of post-lockdown football? Should we expect more of these types of injuries? I think the answer to that last bit is yes. But, Simon, it is a concern that Pulisic's hamstrings seem to be susceptible to injury for a player whose game is based, at least in some part, on his blistering pace.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's he only played half a season last season, a delayed start to this season because of the injury picked up in the cup final. Had only made a couple of appearances, and you could tell he was just working his way back to his form, to his fitness, his match fitness. And so for him to have some kind of discomfort ahead of the Burnley kickoff is a significant setback, and not just for him, but for Chelsea, because as we saw after Project Restart got underway, he was Chelsea's best player. And you sort of think Pulisic in that kind of form, with Ziyech now on the other flank and Werner or Abraham in the middle, etc. You just think, oh, what a front three that would be. But I've been told that he's having a scan on Monday. By the time this comes out, we may have heard the severity of it. But it's a little bit of a concern for sure that once again, Chelsea are going to be sort of having to play the waiting game. Because the thing is if you're Frank Lampard, you're naturally going to be thinking, oh, well, better leave it a few weeks before bringing him back in again to make sure he's 100% right, because the last thing he wants is for Pulisic to come back and break down again. So it's not ideal by any means. On the plus side, the international break's coming up, so maybe that those few weeks he won't go away with America and he'll get to rest up instead.
Yeah, and that would do him some good, one would assume. Okay, next stop for us today, the Champions League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, since we last met, Chelsea enjoyed a comfortable win in Krasnodar, beating the Russian side 4-0, meaning the Blues sit atop Group E ahead of match day three. Match day three already. That's the first part of the doubleheader against Rennes. Roman Abramovich at the Krasnodar game. Here's David asking, great to see Roman midweek, but what are the pod's thoughts on him not meeting with Frank since becoming manager? Seemed like a perfect opportunity. Liam, is there anything we should be reading into this?
No, I don't think so. Chelsea's general approach to these European away trips, at the best of times, is to try and get in and out of the city as quickly as possible around the game. And Chelsea knew they had a long flight home and a big game to prepare for against Burnley. So I don't think it's too much to worry about. You know, Lampard has spoken to Abramovich since he took over Chelsea, but his main point of contact is Marina Granovskaya. She's the one making the day-to-day decisions on the football side of the club. So that really, for the regular functioning of Chelsea, is the most important relationship. And I think the signs are at the moment that it's working pretty well.
Just one thing I sort of heard about it was that Roman did turn up to the team hotel before the game, I think it was, and sort of he didn't really address the squad, though. He was sort of like, acknowledged them and then carried on doing whatever he was up to. So I get the impression that perhaps he was not wanting to be centre of attention anyway, or not get too involved in what was going on, that he didn't want to get in the way. I just think it's very encouraging that he went to the effort and showed that enthusiasm to be at a Chelsea game again anyway, because I think that's the first time since the Europa League final. So I think it should be just seen as a positive, regardless of whether he spoke to Lampard or not.
So that was Krasnodar, pretty simple as it turned out. Ren, next up then at Stamford Bridge on Wednesday. Dom, we mentioned last week your piece about the French team. Other than Eduardo Camavinga, who seems to get most of the headlines, is there anybody else we should be looking out for?
Well, they spent a club record fee on young Doku from Anderlecht in the summer for about 25 million euros, I think it was. A bit of a late pursuit because they lost Rafinha to Leeds. Leeds came in quite late in the window for him, and he expressed a desire to go and try his hand in the Premier League. So they pushed the boat out, really. Doku was a player that he'd scored, I think, for Belgium against Iceland in the Nations League, and sort of that had served to showcase his potential. And Stade Rennais had tracked him for a while and just took the plunge on it. I think a few clubs that were very, very aware of his talent. Liverpool had him at Melwood and Anfield as a 15-year-old. You had Jurgen Klopp and Sadio Mane showing him around the training ground and stadium in an attempt to sort of butter him up ahead of a potential move to Merseyside. But he's ended up in Ligue 1. He's still sort of finding his way in that league, and which is obviously a step up from the Belgian league. But I think he will pose a threat in time. I don't know whether it's probably too early to expect him to set the world alight at Stamford Bridge this week. But they've got a few. They've got some pace. They've got some aggression. Guirassy came in from earlier this season. I think it was from Angers for about 13, 14 million euros. And he's an aggressive forward who might stretch Chelsea slightly. But this is very much a team that's inexperienced at this level. And they've got two players in their squad with some Champions League experience prior to this season. One of whom, Regani, who's on loan from Milan, I think, is he's a doubt injury-wise for this week. The other, Terrier, was at Lyon and never really set the world alight on there either. So it's very, very inexperienced. They're still adapting to life without Edouard Mondi at the back. Gomi has come in now and is playing for them. He came in from Dijon over the summer as part of this spending spree. So look, it's an opportunity actually for Chelsea really to maintain momentum in the group. I can't see Stade Rennais competing for anything other than third place in the section, and they'll be looking to gain experience by coming to London and playing in this match. But you know, other than a bit of pace and aggression up front, they should be easily beatable.
If you want more on Ren, you can read Dom's primer on The Athletic. If you aren't currently a subscriber, you can become one for just £1 a week by taking advantage of a limited time introductory offer. Visit theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to read all the guys' fantastic work on the site and, of course, get ad-free podcasts. Liam, given what Dom's just told us, this ought to be another win then. You think if Chelsea can get 4 or preferably 6 points from this doubleheader, then that would be enough to get them through to the knockout stages?
That's got to be the aim. I mean, when you looked at the match day one result, the draw between Rennes and Krasnodar, I think the big takeaway from that should have been that both of those teams were ripe for the taking for a team with the talent and resources of Chelsea. So they're in a good position now. They took care of business in Russia, which was, you know, maybe the toughest logistical trip, if nothing else. And now they've got a relatively clean path, I think, to qualification from the group. But 6 points from these two games are important if they want to talk about topping the group. And we saw last season how important topping the group can be, because if you don't, you get Bayern Munich in the round of 16.
Can I interject here, just to head off all the complainants at the pass? Daniele Rugani came from Juventus on loan, and Serhou Guirassy came from Amiens, not Angers. Apologies.
That's fine. Anything to get some more of your French pronunciations into the pod is good. Simon, are you thinking in terms of team selection that it's going to be similar to what we saw against Krasnodar? So people like Hudson-Odoi, Azpilicueta, maybe even the lesser spotted Kovacic coming back into the team for this one?
I'm a bit hurt you haven't asked my French pronunciations, but yeah, I think there'll be room for a bit of rotation, yes. And it makes sense. But it won't be crazy rotation. I can't see Frank wanting to upset the first team too much, because he knows, as sort of Liam intimated, that these couple of games against Rennes back to back, and then Chelsea are through, and then he can pretty much rotate for the last two dead rubbers, as it were, with a lot more abandon and really give everyone a go. So yeah, I think a few key positions, like Azpilicueta getting a game. It's noticeable how him and Reece James seem to be the most rotated. I wouldn't have thought Chilwell would be rotated, because he seems to be starting every game. Silva might get a rest, potentially, although there's no issue with travelling this time around, unlike Krasnodar. But yeah, I think if you're Hudson-Odoi, you'd be certainly looking for that opportunity to start with Pulisic, the doubt over his injury. But yeah, just a few changes, but go for those 3 points and then perhaps bring players off, just as we saw against Krasnodar.
Well, that game kicks off at 8 o'clock on Wednesday at Stamford Bridge. Next, we'll turn our attention back to the Premier League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Crikey, it's a relentless season. Two games a week, the new normal for Chelsea this term. The next Premier League assignment sees Sheffield United visit Stamford Bridge on Saturday tea time. This one of those sticky home games for Frank Lampard last season. Chelsea 2-0 up at half-time thanks to Tammy Abraham brace, but let it slip to draw 2-2. You might remember the consternation in the stands when Lampard brought Billy Gilmore off the bench for his Premier League debut. Liam, this is a different Sheffield United though. Rotten start to the season for them. Just 1 point from their opening seven. Last term it was all about the overlapping centre-backs. Do you think that maybe they've been found out a little bit?
I think there could be an element of that. And I say that with the caveat of not having watched Sheffield United every week. So I don't know if opponents have tailored their own approach too much to what Sheffield United are doing. But it's certainly true that they had a very particular, very unusual tactical setup last season that threw quite a few of the teams they played for a bit of a loop. It certainly did Chelsea twice, but they were already tailing off slightly worryingly even when the Premier League resumed in the final stretch of last season. And I think that the big concern for Sheffield United fans has to be that has just continued and, if anything, worsened this year. They've already got one of their defenders, Jack O'Connell, out for quite a while, so things have already been disrupted for them there. Ampadu has started the last two games, which is promising from Chelsea's point of view from a loan, but obviously he can't play against his parent club, so that necessitates another change for them. And they've always struggled for goals, and Ryan Brewster is still kind of finding his way in the Premier League. So this is a game that Chelsea should go into with a lot of confidence, particularly the way that they've played in attack in the last couple of games.
Simon, Liam mentioned Ethan Ampadu there. That leads us on to the obligatory Declan Rice question. It comes from Hussein, who says, are we still interested in Rice when we have Ampadu? News of that on The Athletic on Monday morning.
Yeah, I'm officially the Declan Rice correspondent.
It's going to put out our West Ham correspondent a bit. Yeah.
Well, no, it just feels like I've written about Declan quite a few times. I'm sure Rashane is tired of it as well. But yes, no, Chelsea, their interest hasn't gone away. And why would it? What I've been informed of is that whilst no official bid was made in the last window, it was only because, of course, they spent an awful lot of money and the key was getting players out in terms of raising revenue. And that so it wasn't a case of, oh, Chelsea decided against selling him, it was because they couldn't get the money together. So, yes, of course, it just means the next window they will try and make another move for him. There are players that are in that squad that are clearly not first team untouchables. So there are players that they can get rid of. The question is, of course, it's the January market. We saw in the last window that Chelsea really struggled to get rid of players. So there is that concern of whether history will repeat itself, and they can't get rid of the players they need to. But make no mistake about it, Chelsea still want Declan Rice. They don't see N'Golo Kante, as well as he played against Burnley, as the holding midfielder to play there for good. They want someone that can sit in that defensive midfield and pull the strings, and that's what Declan Rice is going to do. So watch this space.
Yeah, watch this space and do tweet Simon on an hourly basis to ask him if there's any update. Back to Saturday's game, Dom. Frank Lampard's only won one of four managerial meetings with Chris Wilder, and that was way back in 2018 with Derby. How much do you think that Lampard's developed as a coach since that 3-0 humbling at Bramall Lane post-restart?
That's an interesting question. He's obviously got new bodies in that team now. That might have been a formative occasion in terms of where he thought the team needed to strengthen and where he needed to prioritise new signings over the summer. Chelsea don't look like a side that's going to implode anymore when they have this setup with, I mentioned before, with Thiago in the back line and Mondi in goal. There's more structure to it, more solidity there. So I think. It's difficult to judge whether that's a coaching thing. He just has better players at his disposal now in key areas of the team, or players at least who are playing with a lot more confidence than some of the guys that subsided so badly at Bramall Lane. I think this will be a test of him again. I know Sheffield United's results have been dreadful all season. A solitary point from seven games is pretty miserable reading, but they're not getting hammered in matches. And away at Liverpool, they held their own for a long spells in that match, and were, you could argue, quite unfortunate at times. Likewise, at home to Manchester City this weekend, they only lose 1-0, and you know they're testing City again at times. They just need to find some kind of rhythm up front, and they need their forwards, and they have a lot of them. To start firing, they need to find the right combination up top, and you just hope they don't stumble across that at Stamford Bridge at the weekend. I imagine that they're being quite realistic about it all and looking further ahead when they've got games against West Ham and West Brom in the weeks to come, where they might be targeting those as potential opportunities to gain points, because it. Suddenly going to Chelsea does have a bit of a daunting feel to it, the way that Chelsea have been playing in the last few weeks.
5:30 UK time is the kickoff for that one on Saturday. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-18s made it through to the FA Youth Cup final. They might well have played it by the time you hear this. Ed Brand's boys beat Manchester United 1-0 at St George's Park on Friday, thanks to Norwegian Brian Fiebema's goal. Sets up a showdown with Manchester City for the fourth time since 2015 in the Youth Cup final. Should Chelsea be successful, the local Manchester United's record of having won the most prestigious tournament in British youth football 10 times. Simon, you watched the semi. Who stood out for you in a Chelsea shirt?
Yeah, you're right, Matt. There were quite a few outstanding performances, I thought. Livermento at the right back. Tino Engerian just looks an absolute colossus at this level. And I can't wait to see him hopefully get a run out at some point in the first team. What got me about that game was just how it stayed 0-0 for so long, particularly in the first half an hour, where Chelsea absolutely dominated and bossed it. It was it was frightening to see another sort of high quality academy dominate to that degree. I mean, United came back strongly and had a good period themselves, but I thought Chelsea were the better team and deserved to go through, and we'll see what they can do in the final and see if they can match Man United's record of 10 Youth Cup wins. But as per usual, the quality in the youth setup at Chelsea is undeniable. It's remarkable, the consistency, how they replace these players and keep churning them out year after year.
Hashtag buy Neil Bath a pint. There's a piece up on The Athletic now by Kyle Anker about the Youth Cup, which is well worth your attention. In terms of the women's team, they're back in action on Tuesday night. They take on Spurs in the Continental Cup. It'll be the first match in nearly a month for Emma Hayes' team due to international breaks and postponements. It's the Blues' second game in the group stage of the competition they won last season. You can see it live on chelseafc.com and the Fifth Stand app, though you will have to put up with me on commentary. The Blues will then host Everton on Sunday, seeking revenge for their FA Cup quarterfinal defeat against the Toffees in September. Right, just about out of time for today. Before we go, though, let's hear what the chaps have been writing about for Athletic subscribers to peruse. Liam, we mentioned your piece on 4-3-3. What else is in the pipeline?
Yeah, so that piece is up for Athletic subscribers to read right now, but I'll be working on a piece about Chelsea's latest dominant youth team, regardless of how the FA Youth Cup final goes for them. It's just another remarkable run of success for them. I'm also working on longer-term pieces on Ben Chilwell, Callum Hudson-Odoi. Also, a piece for a blitz that we're running next week on what's it like to play for Chelsea women.
Nice, looking forward to that. How about you, Dom?
I'm also taking part in that blitz for next week. On I'm going to do something on what it's like to be a press officer at a club, something I have very brief experience of, very, very brief experience of, and something that I probably wouldn't ever want to go back to. And various other things. I'm doing a piece on one of the most controversial transfers to take place in Premier League history as well, which it's going to take a bit of research, but it was progressing slowly in the background.
Simon, that Ratty Alex Zidzi piece you mentioned last week, absolute must-read stuff for anyone who missed it. What else have you got in the pipeline?
Well, I'm writing a piece which, again, depending when this podcast comes out, that you'll be seeing shortly. It's delving into what has changed about Chelsea's defensive record. Why is it suddenly gone from the ridiculous to the sublime, 5 clean sheets, 6 games, etc. So I'm trying to delve into what exactly has changed. Is it as simple as just the personnel, or is there a bit more to it than that?
Good stuff. Go and get stuck into that. Remember, if you're not currently an Athletic subscriber, you can sign up for just £1 a week by going to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod. That's just about it for today. Thanks for your company, listener. We'll be here throughout lockdown too, bringing you all the best Chelsea coverage. Until next time, from Dom, Liam, Simon, producer Adonis, and myself, it's bye for now.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.